look around. "Are we still aboard Nostrum, sir?" I asked.
"We are," Graves answered. "But we're in a holding pen. We're reviving our own people one at a time, waiting for the verdict."
"Verdict?" I asked, not liking the taste of that word.
"Yes. After you destroyed the Eastern Continent, the news got back to Drusus. He's come out personally to investigate and adjudicate the situation."
My heart sank. I couldn't see how I'd get past a perming this time. Brightening up, I shrugged and stretched.
"Well," I said, "it's good to have you all back among the living. You were captured or killed down there in one of those nests. You know about that, don't you?"
Graves nodded.
"We do. I have vague memories. Unpleasant ones. They have Vobites down there by the millions, but there are also other creatures. Poisonous, flapping things. They latch on to a man and feed."
I grimaced and climbed into a showering stall. "That's all in the past now, sir."
"Hardly. If we don't get permed, we'll be redeployed."
"What?" I asked, leaning back out of the shower.
"That's right," Evelyn said. "Varys gets all the shit work. It never fails. The brass is talking about dropping us again, onto the southern continent this time."
"But there are millions of them," I complained. "We can't kill every bug on the planet."
"No, that's not the mission," Graves said. "This won't be a traditional effort to conquer. They have queens in these nests. The whole planet seems to consist of around 6 giant colonies. Make that 5 now."
"Kind of like the squids?"
"These Vobites are more like social insects. They lay eggs, thousands of them. If we can threaten a High Queen in her egg chamber..."
I looked at him doubtfully. He didn't seem any more convinced than I was. "Can I talk to Drusus before he passes judgment?"
Graves snorted. "That's probably not a good idea. Deitch is with him, and I get the feeling they've got a personal relationship."
"You really think Drusus would be swayed that way?"
"McGill, you just tried to kill his girlfriend."
"I did not. She personally pulled the triggers on the broadsides with me, and then she killed me."
He frowned. "Are you shitting me again, adjunct?"
"No, sir. I swear on my papa's grave."
"Your father is alive, McGill."
"His future grave, then. You have to give me a chance. You have to let me talk to Drusus."
Graves looked indecisive. It was a rare expression for him. Evelyn walked up and snaked an arm around my waist.
"I can get him up there. Turov will help."
Graves huffed. "You're on trial too, Thompson. You're an accomplice."
He began to read the charges on his tapper.
"Gross insubordination, conduct unbecoming, assassination of a superior officer, mass murder, unauthorized entry, unauthorized operation of weaponry, conspiracy to..."
"Yes, yes," I said impatiently. "But it was all for a good cause. They've got to take that under consideration."
Graves made a wry grimace.
"I'm sure they will, McGill."
While Graves had been making his bitter speech, Evelyn had pressed something hard and round into my hand. I knew right off what it was. The Galactic Key.
"Let us go up there," I urged Graves. "We'll fix things."
He stared at me.
"If you can talk your way out of this prison block, you can do whatever you want."
He stalked off, and I eyed the module we were in. It wasn't a standardized steel living module. It was a brig unit with a revival machine in the central chamber. Every exit wasn't just locked, it was sealed. Walking around the module, I sought a way out.
"James!"
Evelyn hissed behind me.
"We've got to get out of here. If they find us guilty, they might just eject this entire module into space and start fresh with new recruits."
"Nah," I said. "They wouldn't eject a perfectly good revival machine. They'll save that for sure."
Searching each hatchway, I finally found a domed access cover over a maintenance tunnel. Fortunately, most of the components that Earth used to build our ships were of alien manufacture. I popped the cover with the key and saw a dank, slippery interior.
"You're going to go into that?"
Evelyn said, looking over my shoulder and wrinkling her nose.
Nope, I said. You are. I'm too damn big, my shoulders would never fit.
She complained, but in the end, she was convinced. We were running out of options. Who knew what gruesome lies Deitch was telling Drusus right now during our absence? After about 15 minutes, during which I heard a lot of curses floating up from that pipe, Evelyn opened the module's emergency exit. I rushed out and found a guard cold-cocked on the floor.
I didn't know you had it in you, Centurion, I told her.
Come on, I've still got clearances that are active. We'll take the stairs up to Gold Deck.
We almost made it, but not quite. As we were unarmed, I found myself irritated by the fact a few non-coms had captured us again.
I'm sure this is all a misunderstanding, Veteran Alders, Evelyn said in a stern voice.
I'm sure it is, sir, but we've got to check. There's been some funny...
Veteran Alders held a gun on me, while the other ran our tappers through a search. His eyes flashed up in alarm a moment later. But it was too late for him. I grabbed his pistol with his finger on the trigger and pushed it into the gut of the second man. Reflexively, he shot his partner. Then, I beat Alders down until he stopped moving. It wasn't anything to be proud of, but there it was. Breathing hard, I turned to Evelyn. She looked sick.
Why'd you do that, James? She asked. Now they'll never believe we're innocent.
Well, we aren't. Not exactly. We're way past that whole thing.
She followed me, hurrying in confusion as I made my way to the conference rooms on Gold Deck.
What whole thing are we past?
You know, all that business of guilt or innocence. We're into the realm of who guessed right and who guessed wrong. Who's going to take the blame for this fiasco and who's going to walk out smelling like a rose?
Deitch is fantastically talented in that department, she said dejectedly.
We'll see.
The door to the conference room opened after a few deft taps with the galactic key. A startled bunch of brass turned to look at us. At the head of the table were three I knew well. Praetor Drusus sat in the center. On his right side was Imperator Deitch. On his left was Tribune Galena Turov.
Sorry, sirs, I announced. We couldn't get here any faster. There must be some misunderstanding with the security personnel.
Deitch didn't snarl at me. Instead, she cocked her head and smiled.
And there we have it, she said, as if we'd somehow proven a point she'd been in the midst of making. I rest my case.
Galena looked at me like I'd strangled her last kitten, and Drusus appeared to smell something foul. I said, uncertain how to proceed.
Am I missing something?
Indeed you are, adjunct, Drusus said.
You've somehow exited your holding cell, and... Ah, yes, reports of injuries are rolling in on my tapper even now.
Look, Praetor, I said. I don't know what's been discussed, but
I must object, Praetor, Deitch said smoothly. The prisoner is dangerous, and he shouldn't be allowed to barge in here to make a statement.
Agreed, Drusus said. But then again, here he is with his confidant. Let's use the moment to finish these proceedings.
Deitch perked up.
You mean it's time to pass a verdict?
Yes, he said, and he seemed deflated, even depressed.
Very well, Deitch said, lighting up. Let us, by all means, proceed.
I tried to object, but they shut me down. Bailiffs and MPs were filling the room by now, and their guns told me I'd better keep quiet. Adjunct James McGill, Centurion Evelyn Thompson, Drusus began. You two are accused of conspiracy to commit a raft of crimes previously listed. How do you plead?
Not guilty, sir, I belted out.
Evelyn hung her head in shame.
Guilty, sir, she said.
Very well, we've heard the evidence. What's your vote, Turov?
Not guilty. I object, Deitch said severely.
Drusus looked at her in surprise. You object to a verdict rendered by their superior officer?
I do, insomuch as this officer is also to stand trial immediately after we finish this proceeding. Really, we should have done this in reverse order.
Drusus thought about that, but then shook his head. Objection overruled. How do you vote, Imperata Deitch?
She tried to look composed, but I could see the glee in her face.
Guilty,
she said.
Since the first moment I laid eyes on this man, he's been nothing but an embarrassment. A slovenly soldier, destined to be permed for insubordination, if nothing else.
Drusus nodded, unsurprised. He sucked in a deep breath. I vote not guilty. We all blinked in surprise. Deitch was positively stunned. Let me explain my reasoning, he said in the silent room. Your DNA was on the triggers just as theirs was, Imperator.
I told you why that—
Drusus lifted a hand. I understand. But the fact remains that without using the broadsides, one of our legions was effectively permed. No matter who we blame for the mess, that step had to be taken.
It's not fitting that low-level officers should take it upon themselves—
No, of course it isn't. Drusus agreed. But when the brass refuses to make the hard choices, or refuses to accept responsibility for them, Varys people tend to act. Deitch glowered at him. I had the feeling their shared bed was going to be ice cold tonight.
What,
she said sternly,
do you propose to do to remedy this breakdown in discipline? Who will be punished, and how?
Drusus ruminated on that. The fault, here in the end, is almost entirely mine. I allowed my judgment to be swayed again and again. This entire venture has turned into a fiasco due to my errors. Therefore, I can't hold anyone responsible for—
That's insane! Deitch cried out, standing tall. Praetor Drusus, I must demand—
This trial is dismissed, he said firmly. As are all follow-up charges and recriminations. We're here to win a war, officers. We're not here to infight, to investigate, to waste valuable time. I don't think anyone here is a traitor to Earth, but we've lost our way, and leadership has failed to unite everyone in this task force and guide them to victory. The courtroom fell silent again, but I couldn't contain myself any longer. I stood up and released a long war whoop. While doing so, I cranked my arm over my head and swung it around as if my team had just won the pennant. In a way, I guess we had.
Chapter 39 The next morning, the legions began to drop on Dark World again. This time around, I went down with them. Dropping one at a time into the capsules and firing out of the belly of Nostrum, my unit looked universally tense and glum, but I was all smiles. Now, to be sure, I wasn't certain we had a prayer of beating the Vulbites, but at least we had a new plan, and I hadn't been permed. Grinning, I tucked each recruit into their little cylindrical coffins and shot them at Dark World's dank landscape with glee in my heart. "Come on," I boomed. "Step right up. Who's my next lucky splat?" This was their third drop, so I didn't expect any splats. But you never knew. One by one, my recruits walked out into open space. They were sucked into that round black hole in the deck and swiftly processed. At last, it was my turn. Without hesitation or regret, I hopped in and shot myself at the planet. The jump went as smoothly as such things could go. We punched through the cloud layer and screamed downward. The external heat shields measured around 3,000 degrees Celsius and all systems were go. Retros fired in the final minute, slowing down our capsules. Even so, we landed rough, some cylinders sinking into the soft ground a meter or more. Blasting the release bolts, we crawled out of our smoking eggs like hatchlings. Getting my bearings, I summoned my platoon as it landed, and we all moved out of the LZ. It was my first up-close view of Dark World. Right off, I could tell the planet was a strange one. The horizon seemed too close, as the planet wasn't that big. You could practically see the curve of it from the ground. Off to the east, where the sky was brightest, it was still pretty murky. The dim light made the grass look purple rather than green. The soil was more mud than dirt, and it was as black as space itself. To the north was a low, worn-toothed series of humps in the ground. I guess they were mountains, dinky ones. There weren't any trees where we landed, but larger flora in the shape of big leafy plants was in sight to the west. "Don't get nailed down by the next wave," I urged my troops. "I want every trooper to move past the western line you see on your HUD now." A wave of color swept over the group, and they could all see the only direction where marginal safety lay. To the west, a line of light was superimposed on their faceplates. They rushed there, scrambling, limping, and dragging themselves as needed. We all made it. There were a few injuries, but nothing as serious as a broken bone. "A picture-perfect landing," I told them, and I clapped Cooper on the back. He winced, but smiled and nodded up at me. When our whole unit had formed, we'd only lost one heavy trooper when a capsule flattened him in the LZ. "I hear you've got a debtor on your hands already, Harris," Leeson said, gloating. Harris cast him a glare. "It was your weaponeer that landed on him as he was trying to get off the field." "You snooze, you lose," Leeson said, chuckling. Winslade popped up in our midst like a gopher. "Let's shut up and advance to our next waypoint, shall we?" "Yes, sir," I said, and I rushed off in the lead. As the man commanding the light troops, I knew without asking it was my job to scout ahead. We made rapid progress across a field of purple-green grasses until we reached a line of something that resembled trees. Whatever you might want to call them, they were big plants growing in rich, black soil. Up close, the trees looked less and less like real trees. They were like gigantic versions of something I'd seen in my mom's vegetable garden. Beets, that's what they looked like. The man-sized leaves were bright green, but they had purple veins running all through them. The veins were thick and squiggly, and they made me a little uneasy when I examined them too closely. The stalks holding up the leaves were purple, too, but they weren't as disturbing as those ropey purple veins. "Weird-looking plants they have down here, huh?" Leeson asked me when his platoon caught up. "You haven't seen anything yet, McGill. Keep moving. You're gonna love this shithole." Leading my light troops, I advanced into the giant field of beets, pushing past fleshy leaves and crunching over tangled root structures. We were soon deep in the thicket, and sounds of wind and soldiers faded, muffled by the fleshy plants. We encountered our first group of vulbites by chance. They were surrounding one of the plants, feeding on it. They had sharp pinchers with stabbing tubes that came out of the middle of their mouth parts.
"Are they high or something?"
Sarah asked me in a whisper. She came near and crouched, breathing hard.
"They're ignoring us. They might be civilians," I said,
although they all looked the same to me.
"That one's moving,"
Sarah shouted, and before I could stop her, she pounded it with 50 rounds out of her snap rifle. The troops converged, crashing through the bushes, and began firing. The vulpites rushed us, curved blade-like pinchers spread wide. But they didn't stand a chance. They were all cut down and killed.
"That could have gone better," I said.
"How?" Cooper asked. "We got them all, and we didn't lose a single soldier. It was a job well done, if you ask me."
"Nobody's asking you," I said. "Take point."
He shrugged and did as I asked. I watched him move off into the big purple-green foliage. Was it a mistake to send Cooper ahead? If more vulbites were found, civvy or not, I knew what he'd do. The trouble was these aliens were just too alien for humans to deal with fairly. It was hard to imagine peacefully interacting with this species. Every vulbite looked like something every human wanted to kill on reflex. The beet field thinned out after a kilometer or so, and we approached the nest itself. This is where I began to wish I'd been revived before the briefings. Checking my waypoint on my HUD, I had a vague idea about where I was going, but I didn't have much information on the cohort or the Legion as a whole. All I knew was the ground would rise up and up about 500 meters or so. At the top of this rise was the entrance to the nest, or hive, that we were assaulting. As the rise in the ground steepened, the vegetation thinned. We finally came close enough to the edge of the beet plant forest to see the hill in the center of the Legion, in all its glory.
"There they are," Leeson said, "up on top of the hill, waiting for us."
I stared up. The hill was artificial, of course. To me, it looked more like an anthill than a termite mound, but it had properties of both. The nest wasn't simple dirt. It was shot through with a sophisticated weave of naturally extruded polymers. In other words, the mound was made of dirt laced with spit, or something worse than spit. Harris clapped me on the shoulder. "Isn't that a sight to behold? From out here it looks pretty cool, but trust me, it isn't nice inside, hell no. It's full of tricks and traps. That's how we got caught the first time. At least, that's what they tell me happened. I can't remember because once you go into that mound, your radio will cut out, and you'll be on your own."
"I'll be on my own?"
Harris grinned. "That's what Winslade said in the briefing you missed. Scouts go in first, light troopers only. This must be your lucky day." He walked off laughing and shaking his head. I'd gotten a lot of grief like that on this drop. Every trooper who'd come down the first time and gotten skunked assaulting an anthill like this one seemed bitter. They were all under the impression I'd been lounging around while dead in the revival queue. Winslade sidled up to me next. He wore a smug expression.
"Have you heard the news, then?"
he asked.
"That I'm going up there to the top?"
"Yeah, I heard about it. Isn't that what the cohort did before when you got wiped?"
"Not quite,"
he sneered, clearly unhappy to be reminded of the previous invasion, which had turned into a disaster.
"Anyway, we'll all circle the nest, staying under cover until every unit is in position. Then Graves will give us the final word on when to attack, if the bugs don't make their move preemptively."
"The Vulbites might hit us first?" I asked. He released a disgusted snort.
"You really don't read your briefings, do you?"
"Well, sir, I was..." But I was talking to his back. He'd spun around and stalked off to harangue the other adjuncts. "Damn these people," I muttered. "Cooper, get over here." He crawled back from his forward position where he'd been observing the hill from under a leafy canopy on the edge of the forest. "Cooper," I told him. "No one seems to get that I wasn't down here the last time, and that I didn't have time to do much reading while I was dead."
"Yeah," he said.
"Okay, I'll give you the rundown. Up there, the bugs are watching us. They've got instruments of some kind. Organic lenses in the dirt, listening systems, I don't know what else. But this smooth mound, it's not just a random hill of dirt. It's full of traps and maybe buried enemy defenders."
"That's great," I said. "The Vulbites always were a sneaky bunch. What happened the last time the Legion surrounded a hill like this?"
"We bombarded the top, trying to tear it open. That succeeded to some extent. Then the lights rushed uphill."
"Okay, what next?"
"I got up to the top, but then I died pretty fast. That's all I remember. You'll have to talk to the heavies about the rest."
I grunted unhappily, and I signaled Sargon. He was a weaponeer, and he wore armor.
"It went like this," he said when I'd explained my confusion. "The lights were the bunny rabbits. We followed them to lend strength. The Vulbites let them get inside the top. It's kind of like the cone of a volcano up there. But most of the heavies didn't make it. The ground gave way under us. At first I thought it was because our armor was too dense and caused us to break through. But I was wrong. The bugs had been busy, digging man traps under the surface."
He gave a shudder at that memory. That wasn't normal for Sargon. He usually didn't fear anything, not even a grim death.
"It was bad down there," he continued. "Full of burrowing things, not just Vulbites. The ones we're used to seeing are the worker types, I think. There are more varieties inside their mounds. Eventually, I was captured inside some lightless hellhole. More than a few of us men were eaten.
I must have had a good signal because I remember that they were chewing on me when your shells came down. Thanks for that, by the way. He stumped off, shaking his head. I stared after him. He was the first one who seemed happy about my role in the aerial bombardment, but it was clear he wasn't happy to be on Dark World again. About then, I heard a flapping sound. The troops looked up, and they all raised their rifles to their cheeks.
Oh, one final thing I forgot to mention, McGill, Cooper shouted to me. The flying things. They're kind of like big stakes that can fly in this low gravity. Don't let them get on your air hoses or into your faceplate. They'll take the skin right off a man.
Firing began, and I spun around trying to get a good look at one of them. Finally, I spotted what they had to be talking about. It was maybe as big as a frying pan. It did look like a slab of meat. Bent in half, the flapping monstrosity didn't appear to have eyes or any other sensory organs I could make out, but it seemed to know right where we were. Ripping fire went up from a dozen rifles. The creature tore apart in midair, shredded by the snap rifle rounds. It burst, and blood sprayed everywhere. It was as if the creature had been a loose sack of red liquid. One was down, but there were a lot more flapping noises now. I turned back toward the forest, and then I saw it. A gigantic flock hovered over the beet forest. The flock rose up like a storm cloud. There had to be thousands. Chapter 40
Unit, circle up, Winslade ordered. Fire into that central mass, but be ready with your knives when they get in close.
I rolled onto my back and fired a steady series of bursts. Set for mid-range tactical fire, a snap rifle released 10 rounds at a time. You could put a lot of metal in the air fast that way, without losing control of your weapon due to recoil. Each burst kicked up my rifle's muzzle a little, but I brought it back down again, keeping it more or less on target, while sending a hail of destruction downrange. The mass of flapping things swept over us. Soon they descended, spreading out and swooping low. They plunged into the forest and came zooming through it to attack us from every angle at once. Tracking one at a time, I stayed with my 10-round burst setting. Every few seconds, I fired and tore apart another flapper. That's what my troops called them, flappers. Sometimes one of the beet bushes was damaged and a branch fell. A giant leaf drooped over me, obscuring my vision. Angrily, I pushed the leaf away, but the flappers were already on me. Two of them slapped onto my suit. One was working on my faceplate, trying to tear it open. I could see the veins in it, the pulsing, muscular mass. It seemed to have a very thin skin, so you could see the working guts and pumping fluids inside. It was like being attacked by a living mass of tissue. The thing was strong, too. My gauntlets were on it, fingers prying, trying to get under the edges of the flaps to rip them away. My faceplate was slimed up, and I already heard the hissing sound of escaping air. "Son of a bitch," I said, and I gave up on the strategy of prying it off. Instead, I drew my combat knife like Winslade had suggested. I stabbed and sliced, trying not to gouge my own faceplate. The flapper at last relaxed, and I managed to scrape it off and sit up. Oddly, I was still hearing the hissing of leaking air. In fact, it was louder now.
"McGill," Sargon said, "you've got one on your air hose. Don't let it burn all the way through."
I panicked a little. I slashed at it over my shoulder, and I cut my own damned hose. Cursing, I killed the flapper and was left standing there panting with an air leak. Fortunately, the air here was breathable, if a little oxygen-rich for humans.
"Here, let me help you with that, sir,"
Sarah said, coming near and patching my hoses up. Looking round, I saw no more flappers.
"Did we really get them all?" I asked.
"No way," Cooper said.
"That was just a test. It was the same way last time. The nest likes to probe us first to see what works.
How many did we lose?" Checking into it, I found we'd only lost one light trooper and two others in the unit.
"That's better than last time," Harris told me. "We freaked out when those flapping ship bags hit us and lost 9 men. 9! And we hadn't even marched up the friggin' Death Hill yet."
The Death Hill. My eyes couldn't help but stray to the rising mound.
the artificial mountain we'd encircled. Looking at it, I began to realize why no one in the unit had blamed me for blasting the nest and most of our legion to fragments with Nostrum's broadsides. I was wishing someone else would do the same favor for me. But I wasn't so lucky. The belief among the brass was that we could do better this time around, as we'd already experienced the worst this enemy could dish out. It was all about Deech's ego in the end. She didn't want to lose, and we were going to have to suffer as a result. Turov kicked off the big attack with what amounted to a pre-game pep talk.
"Soldiers," she said, "we're all in position now, and we're prepared to assault the Volbite Mound."
I found this to be an ironic statement. We were watching her on our tappers, and it was as plain as day to see that she was still aboard Nostrum. The glowing walls of the conference room on Gold Deck were in the background, just in case any of us weren't certain.
"This time things will go differently," she assured us. "We'll surge in with greater force and superior planning. Rather than rushing up the mound in units, lights first, followed by heavies, we'll employ a new tactic."
The camera angle shifted, and I could see we were now witnessing a vid-streaming feed from Dark World. The green-leafed, purple-veined plants were in abundance. Standing in a clearing was a pair of gateposts, and Primus Graves was standing beside them. Two techs activated the jump gate, and immediately, soldiers began to march out. The soldiers weren't human. Not exactly. They were Blood Worlders. First came a full unit of slavers. Tall, lanky beings with limbs a full 2 meters in length, they skulked out of the jump gate and moved up the hill. They fanned out and picked their way up the slope, testing and probing the soil. The intelligence of this move impressed me. The slavers were the scouts of Blood World. They had better senses, vision, hearing, and sense of smell than normal humans did. Possibly they could detect a trap before it was sprung. After this, heavy troops rolled out of the jump gate. Dozens, then hundreds, then so many I lost count. They kept marching, and they never seemed to stop.
"I love it," Harris said next to me. "This is the best damned idea Turov ever had. She's going to pave over the hill with their bodies instead of ours."
I wasn't so happy. These men were faithfully following orders, and sure, they looked and acted like aliens. But they weren't. Not really. We were still genetically compatible. They were our cousins, at the very least. More importantly, every time one of these Blood Worlders died, they'd be permed. There was only one revival machine aboard Nostrum that could handle someone of their size. This was going to be nowhere near enough. The littermates formed up ranks of nine and marched off to the sides, fanning out behind the slavers.
"Now,"
Turov said from my tapper. Her face filled the screen.
"When the mound is fully encircled, the Blood World troops will advance first. They'll take the brunt of the initial casualties, and with luck the slavers will locate the traps. Either that or the heavy troopers will fall through and find them all due to their weight. Each one weighs almost as much as a full human squadron."
"Genius," Leeson said, running over to me and showing me his tapper. "Are you watching this, McGill, or are you sleeping?"
"I'm watching, but I don't like it."
"What? Are you high, boy? This has to be the smartest thing Turov has ever done."
I glared at him. "Leeson, those men feel pain the same as we do. They're going to be permed when they die, not just inconvenienced until tomorrow."
"Heck, boy, that's what they're for," he shouted at me, exasperated. "Why the hell do you think we took over their baked rock of a planet? They're cannon fodder, and it's time to feed the cannons."
He stalked away back to his platoon, shaking his head and muttering about Blood Worlders not feeling anything and what a fool I was. About 3,000 of them formed up, and when the signal came, they all rushed the mound. We played sniper, laying down covering fire from the base of the hill. A few Volbites poked their snouts up, but we pegged them the moment they did so. Soon they'd vanished back into the cool recesses of their gigantic nest. The plan worked pretty well at first. The slavers used flags to mark spots where they'd detected a trap, and the littermates skirted these. It wasn't until they made it about halfway up that things got interesting. As I watched, one of the slavers vanished. Then another. "Something's happening," I called out.
"I saw it too," Harris said.
"Have we got buzzers up there?"
We did. Kiwi fed me her stream, and I watched as a wary slaver was sucked into the earth. There was nothing left but a divot of sifting dirt and a tiny puff of dust to show where he'd been.
"Stop the attack," I called out. But Winslade flapped a hand at me in annoyance.
"Don't lose your nerve so easily, McGill," he said. "You'll demoralize the troops."
More slavers marked the spots where the first rank vanished, and they moved up further. They were now about three-quarters of the way to the top. That's when the first rank of the heavy troopers began to sink, all at once. How was this coordination managed? I couldn't tell at a distance, but I suspected Volbites were lying in wait, and they'd let the slavers go by. Reacting to the heavy boots of the littermates, they uncoiled and wrapped themselves around the second rank of bloodworlders. Croaking in dismay, the men hacked around themselves with their massive swords. The fighting was too close and intense for rifles. Some of the big men managed to lift their attackers from the dirt, swirling around their waists, and hold them high. Bulging muscles flexed, and the Volbites were torn apart by sheer strength. My unit cheered, and I cheered with them. Still, our march up to the summit was faltering. It had turned into a dusty, vicious struggle on the slopes of the mound.
"Next wave, advance,"
Turov ordered.
"You heard the lady," Graves said. "Lights, you're going to play the part of the slavers in that last rush. The Bloodworlder heavies will back you up. Move out."
Surprised, I realized I was in the game again. I got up and trotted into the field. My lights were at my back, spreading out in a broad line. Behind them, our unit's bloodworlders wandered up, looking confused. I expected Harris to lead them. I honestly did. But instead, he sent out our squid liaison, sub-veteran Silt. Harris stayed back inside the tree line, and he gave me the finger when I waved him forward.
"Come on, adjunct,"
I shouted back at Harris. He retreated with his human troops under the forest canopy.
"What a pussy,"
Cooper said next to me, and I pretended I didn't hear him. The new lineup was suboptimal. We had about the same numbers as the first wave, but the light trooper humans don't have super senses. Any traps that weren't marked, we immediately found with our feet. Still, as most of the traps had been sprung, we managed to reach the high ground where the Bloodworlder charge had floundered. We passed them and pressed onward to the top. I ordered my heavy troops to help their brothers where they could, dragging them out onto the surface. Due to these actions, we reached the summit with more soldiers than I'd started off with. Silt came up behind me as I hesitated near the top of the hill.
"Have you lost your bravado?"
he asked. "Nope. I'm trying to think of the best way to proceed."
"Indecision. Hesitancy. Defeat is fraught with these terrors."
I turned to face him. "You want to charge in there in the lead, Squid?"
"It wouldn't be appropriate. I'm only a sub-veteran."
"Yeah, but you're getting on my nerves."
"My translation box."
"Translate this. Shut up, Squid," I said slowly. He got the message and slid away from me.
"Cooper," I shouted, "go over that ridge and look down into the cone."
"That's me, sir,"
he said brightly.
"The human equivalent of a buzzer.
Half of Kiwi's buzzers have been lost. They set off some EMP blasts on the way up. I'm saving the rest for when we get into that nest."
"So I'm less valuable than a buzzer?" Cooper said.
"Good to know." I watched him advance on his belly. I could have given him a hard time, but I didn't have the heart. When a man knows he's been given a deadly assignment, Vera's tradition allows for some bitching, as long as he does his best to carry out his orders. The kid slithered up like a snake and went over the rim. The rest of us hugged the dirt just below the crusty summit. For about 10 seconds, I didn't see or hear anything. We were pretty far above the forest of beet bushes, which stretched out as far as the eye could see. There was a light wind blowing up.
but we didn't dare open our faceplates. A sudden scrabbling caught my attention. Cooper launched over the crest toward us, but he was sucked back down again. Carlos and I lunged forward, caught his wrists, and dragged his sorry ass up and over the rim. "Grenades out!" I shouted. "Every third man activate and throw on my mark! Mark!" My troops scrambled forward, twisted the caps off their grav grenades, and tossed them into the cone of the hole. A series of brilliant blue flashes went off. There were no screams, but there was some hissing and thrashing.
"Holy shit, sir!" Cooper's voice came over the tactical chat. "They almost got me!"
"See?" I said. "This really is your lucky day, Cooper." He just blinked at me. "Platoon, advance!" I roared these words and I rushed for the top. Startled, my troops followed me, including the Blood Worlders. It was time to get serious. Chapter 41. When I assaulted the summit of the nest, Leeson, Harris, and hundreds of other officers were working their way up the hill behind me. We had thousands of troops on the march, but I didn't figure the Volbites were going to wait around politely for us to gather our full strength. "Light troops, belly down on the ridge. Heavy troopers, advance into the cone itself." They followed orders at a jog. It was hard to get up and over as the earth was loose and sandy. The rim of the cone crumbled under our boots. It was kind of like charging over a sand dune. But we did it. Advancing with their odd croaking cries, the Blood Worlders thundered down into the sandy depths. They kicked up a dust cloud that would have choked us if we hadn't been wearing respiratory gear. In response to our move, other platoons that had crested the rim of the cone did the same, advancing into the center. Suddenly the center erupted with a massive gush of pink-gray objects. For a second I thought maybe the mound was a volcano after all and it had just gone off. But no, it was a vast flock of flappers, thousands upon thousands of them rushing up like disturbed bats. They massed up in a screeching, fluttering cloud that quickly descended upon the troops. The light troopers I'd left all along the rim did gruesome work then. They fired into that mass with abandon. We couldn't get them all, there were just too many, but we did tear them up something awful. Our bursts of fire could hardly miss the flapping masses, and each round tore through not one but often a dozen of the leathery bundles of flesh. It practically rained dying flappers on the heavy troopers who advanced, undaunted, into the dark. They were drenched in blood, which turned into black grime when it mixed with the dust that coated us all. "Gunners, advance!" I roared when the mess cleared out. "Don't let the Blood Worlders get too far ahead." We rushed down after our slower, heavier brothers. Together we forced our way into the clinging darkness of the central mouth. The open cone of the anthill structure was maybe 200 meters across, but the hole in the center of it was only perhaps a tenth of that. Still, it was big enough to swallow a lot of troopers quickly. Once inside, it felt like the dim sun had vanished, and we'd been caught in a winding, sloping cavern that must go all the way down to hell itself. The sound quality changed from the normal tones of the open world to the deadening sound of being surrounded for miles by shaped earth. We jogged deeper still, down curling tunnels. Soon, all natural light cut out. The Volbites didn't seem to use artificial light in their tunnels. Perhaps they guided themselves by scent when below ground. Blindly jogging forward, we met enemy resistance, but it wasn't strong. Now and then, one came rushing at us out of a side tunnel, but we shot those down immediately. I began to take heart. Could it be that once you were inside the anthill, their major defenses had been bypassed? Was this more like a civilian hive rather than an armed camp? Perhaps we'd reached the soft underbelly of the enemy and would soon locate their queen. My flights of fancy were soon corrected by harsh, new realities. The floor gave way on a long ramp, and ahead of us, a dozen or so surviving heavy troops, led by Silt himself, vanished into the darkness. I pulled up short on the last ledge. Behind me, a score of light troopers piled up. I don't see them down there, sir, Cooper said. Keevy, give me a depth reading. She scooted past the rest and came up to perch on the edge with Cooper and me. She used sensors and sent down crawling buzzers. Keevy shook her head.
It's deep, 50 meters, maybe more. They're moving around down there, but...
Silt, I called out. Sub-veteran Silt! Are you alive? Report! A crackling voice came back on my headset.
We're here. 2 casualties so far. We're circling up back to back, but I fear the worst. The Vulbites have separated us from your weaklings, and they obviously intend to finish us off in this dark pit.
That's one rude squid, Cooper chuckled, listening in. I say we leave his ass down there to take as many with him as he can.
This pissed me off. I'd given Cooper all kinds of rope, hoping to upgrade his nature. But this was a step too far for me. I grabbed him by the scruff and pitched him into the darkness ahead. He rolled, squawking and flopping. That made me feel a twinge, but only for a moment.
Cooper has bravely advanced to help our Blood World brothers. Who's with me to rescue them all?
A very lame cheer went up from my light troopers. Taking this as a clear mandate, I ordered them to advance and went with them. The path was steep. We skidded down and down, churning up the dirt into a choking cloud. We would have suffocated if we hadn't been wearing suits. Those troopers who had opened their faceplates in panic, in fact, were gagging and hacking their lungs out.
Button up, I ordered. I know fighting in a suit sucks, but it's better than choking.
The chamber at the bottom of hell itself was maybe 2 dozen meters wide. It was unevenly shaped, every dimension being curved and organic rather than squared off. The floor had the undulating shape of a pool bottom, and the roof scraped our heads in spots, while in others it was unreachable.
All right, guns out. Stop moving around. Let the dust settle.
We froze, waiting, sweating, and staring in every direction. There was no way we'd manage to surprise the enemy, except possibly by advancing deep so quickly. That made me think. Stopping here was a mistake. All we were doing was allowing the Vulbites to encircle us. Maybe they were undermining us right now or gathering their combat units together in strength to crush us.
Light troopers, I said. I want you to take each of these side tunnels. I'm sending one pair into each one. If you encounter resistance, don't engage. Just run back and report. If you make it 100 meters in or find some kind of obstacle, turn around and report.
Walking along, I slapped pairs of helmets and pointed toward side tunnels, of which there were 9. Soon they were humping off into the dark again. Cooper gave me a sour look when I slapped his head, and Sarah's beside him.
Go on, I shouted, giving him a shove.
He ran forward, doubled over at the waist so he could fit into the tunnel, and disappeared. Sarah followed him, looking scared.
I knew what was on their minds. If they vanished in one of these missions and the rest of us got out, they might be permed.
Revivals could only be authorized if we had confirmed kills. Otherwise, there might be 2 versions of any given soldier running around on the planet. That would be illegal, unethical, and very confusing to everyone. When it had happened in the past, one of the troopers, usually the erroneous copy, had to be terminated. For that reason, legionnaires feared environments like this more than they did the open battlefield. If you were knocked flat and turned into a bloody smear under an officer's boots, there was no doubt about your status, and the revival usually came soon after. We waited, and slowly the scouts began trickling back. I got reports from every direction, along with mapping news from 12 of Keevy's crawling buzzers. Putting this all together, Keevy's computer built me a 3D map.
All right, Keevy said, setting up a small battle projector.
It looked like a portable camp stove, but it projected a hologram that glowed with a blue-green radiance.
See this? This is where we are inside the nest.
She showed me a large angled view. We were about two-thirds of the way down the base of the hill, in the very middle of it.
Damn, I said. How deep is this damned thing? I thought we should be hitting the queen by now.
She released a bitter laugh.
No, no, no. You don't know anything about ants, do you? The hill part is just the tip of the iceberg. It extends far below ground in an ancient colony. On Earth, a colony of large ants will dig 3 meters down sometimes.
I computed that in my head, and I didn't like the answer at all. We're not even down to the surface level yet, I complained. You mean this thing could go on under the Earth for kilometers?
Yes, and I suspect it does.
A circle of eyes watched me. No one was happy. No one cracked a joke, not even Carlos. They all knew I had the power to order them deeper, and they didn't want to go. What about the other human units? I asked. Any radio contact, any signs others have been this way?
None,
Keevy said.
We're either ahead of them, or we've been cut off from them somehow.
I eyed Keevy. You went down here before with Graves and the rest. Is this how it went?
No, sir. We didn't make it this far. We were trapped and buried soon after penetrating the nest. I have only fuzzy memories and no idea how it ended, as the tappers couldn't update our engrams.
I nodded. Once you got outside the grid, your memories couldn't be recorded easily. If we all died right here, right now, it was unlikely that we'd remember any of this, assuming we were revived and not permed, that is. Gunfire broke out then, before I could make a rational decision. Not all the light troopers had returned yet, and some of them had made contact. The Volbites had ambushed my scouts. We moved to help, but it was too late. Only 6 of my lights came back. Cooper and Sarah were unaccounted for.
Damn it,
I said to myself. Veteran Mahler.
Sir.
You're in charge if I don't get back. I'm going after Cooper and Sarah.
She said, looking around in alarm. I knew it was stupid. Most of the rest of them did, too.
Do you really have to do this, James?
Carlos asked me. Adjunct?
I glanced at him.
Yeah. I sent them down there. If we don't have bodies, alive or dead, they're permed. I'm going. I'll only go a short distance. If I don't come back...
Adjunct McGill, Silt said, speaking up for the first time. May I lodge an objection?
No, I told him, and he clammed up.
Silt looked like one unhappy squid. His eyes were rolling around in groups, checking all of us, counting heads, probably. I'm sure he knew the score. If he died down here in this death trap, he was unlikely to catch a revive at all.
I crept into the dark tunnel, the one I'd sent Cooper into, and left my platoon behind. Chapter 42. Going after Sarah and Cooper was a stupid thing to do. I knew that. Graves would have marked them down as permed and not even bothered to shrug his shoulders. But I wasn't like that. I hated leaving troops behind. Sure, I'd shoot them myself if they deserved it. But this was different. We were talking permadeath, the bugaboo of all legionnaires. The thing we all feared the most. Any legionnaire preferred a clean death to being captured, lost, or simply left behind on a hostile planet. Creeping forward, the silence of the place got on my nerves. The sounds I could hear seemed amplified as I strained to listen. The respirator hissed and sighed. My suit scratched and thumped over the earth. Soon, as I advanced, I was forced to bend over, then crawl as the ceiling lowered. Still, I saw no sign of them. 50 meters in, I paused, knowing I should turn back. Volbites might ambush what was left of my command, and I should be there with them. Taking off my helmet, I listened for a few seconds in the dark. Figuring to hell with it, I cupped my hands around my mouth.
Cooper!
Sarah! I shouted. Are you out there? We're giving up on you and moving out.
There was no response.
All right, I said. You're both as good as permed. Luck!
After a few more seconds, I clamped my helmet back on and turned around. There, to my shock, was Cooper. He had crept up behind me in the tunnel. He had a strange look on his face. My eyes narrowed.
Were you about to frag your commanding officer, Cooper?
No, sir, he said, sighing.
I was about to go AWOL, but you convinced me to come back.
I squinted at him.
Where's Sarah?
Over here, he said.
That's why I came back. For her.
I followed him, and I saw a crawl space I'd missed on the way. Sarah was in there, with a dead Vulbite.
It rushed out of this bolt hole. I killed it, but not before it nailed Sarah.
Recording the death, I touched my tapper to hers. That way, her latest memories would be stored. Let's see if I've got this straight, I said while I looked over the scene. You were so spooked down here that you lost your damn mind?
Sorry, sir. Being in this bug nest must have gotten to me. I had fantasies of finding my way out alone.
Thoughtfully, I turned to face Cooper dead in the eye. Let's head back. You first. He moved down the narrow tunnel as limber as a gibbon. I followed as quickly as I could. Officers have heavier kits with breastplates and more gear. Deep in these tunnels, it slowed us down more than anything else.
You thought you could find your way back out? To the top?
I asked.
Maybe, he said over his shoulder. I figured my odds were better than following you 5 more kilometers down.
There was a certain logic to it. If he went up instead of down, he might find another unit. He could hook up with them, or at least be recorded as a death if they found his body.
So you were trying to avoid being permed, right?
Yeah.
That's a violation, Cooper.
I know, sir.
You can bust me down to recruit in the morning.
I snorted. Cooper was already a recruit, which was as low as you could go in a legion.
Why'd you change your mind?
Sarah, he said.
It's one thing to perm myself, but I didn't want to take chances with her. Now that you've recorded her death, I figured the odds someone from this cursed unit will carry that fact out of here were better than my odds alone.
It didn't totally make sense, but then again it did. I suspected it wasn't a calculation of odds that had turned Cooper around. It was the guilt. He'd been risking his own skin, but it was different to risk Sarah's. I decided not to press him further or to punish him. Life was shitty enough for a recruit in Legion Varus without people giving you an extra ration. About when I was having this thought, I heard ripping fire up ahead and a commotion. We rushed forward without speaking further, and we flipped off our suit lights. When we got back to the main chamber, I could see things had not gone smoothly in my brief absence. Veteran Mahler was on the ground, face down in the dirt. A rash of red splotches decorated the back of her suit. Sub-veteran Silt stood tall. A squid normally was 4 times the bulk of a man, and Silt was no slouch. His powerful limbs twitched and squirmed like snakes.
I have taken necessary action, he said. Veteran Mahler is not an officer. I will lead you out of this trap to the sunlight again.
Carlos, Keevy, and the handful of light recruits who'd survived had squared off with Silt, who stood with the larger group of hulking bloodworlders. Instantly, the problems with fighting in integrated units loomed in my mind. Discipline might break under the best of circumstances, but when you stirred in various planetary cultures and alien mindsets, well, it was a powder keg. Cephalopods simply didn't think like humans did. They were almost as different from us as the Vulbites were. They only understood master-slave relationships for one thing. If a squid got the upper hand on another squid, or anyone else, it was written in his DNA that he should try to overthrow the leader.
Silt had been stressed by this long plunge into darkness. He knew he wasn't immortal like we were, and he couldn't take it. A being that knows he'll be given a revive if things go wrong is much more likely to follow you to death.